From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty with the news on This Day in Maine, Thursday, October 10th, 2019.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org. And Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens, presenting Gardens Aglow, where visitors will see the gardens in a whole new light. Tickets available at mainegardens.org.
A third Republican has announced his bid to try to unseat Democrat Jared Golden in the race for Maine's 2nd Congressional District. Former state lawmaker Dale Crafts says he has the endorsement of former Governor Paul LePage as he faces two other Republican primary contenders, Adrian Bennett, who served as LePage's press secretary, and former state lawmaker Eric Brakey. An economics professor at the University of Maine, Machias, who sued the UMaine system, has had his suit tossed out by the First Circuit Court of Appeals. Jonathan Reisman, an active member of Maine's Republican Party, resigned his membership in the Associated Faculties of the University of Maine, or AFUM, because he says the union actively supported causes and candidates with which he disagrees. Reisman argued the representation through the union violated his First Amendment rights because it associates him with that political activity. Even after resigning, he says he had no right to file a grievance without going through the union. Reisman is represented in his suit by Robert Ault of the Ohio-based Buckeye Institute, a think tank that is committed to, quote, individual liberty, free enterprise, personal responsibility, and limited government. Reisman's case is part of a larger campaign by the organization to limit public employee unions. Ault says he plans to appeal the decision to the U.S. Supreme Court.
We've been looking to ultimately get relief for our clients, and I think ultimately it's going to take the Supreme Court answering this question so there's clarity on the law throughout the country.
In its decision, the Boston Appeals Court said the union isn't designated as Reisman's sole representative, as he contends, and in fact the law specifically says that an employee can present grievances to the university system without getting permission from the union. In emailed statements, AFUM President Jim McClymer said the lawsuit is part of a, quote, well-funded plan to reduce people's rights in the workplace, and that claiming a union restricts First Amendment rights is an absurdity. UMaine spokesman Dan DeMeritt said the decision affirms that UMS is following Maine law. And public health authorities in Maine say the state has received word of the first cases of seasonal influenza for the new flu season. The Maine Center for Disease Control and Prevention is advising flu shots for anyone over 6 months old. In weather tonight, clear skies in the far north, otherwise overcast with some possible showers, lows in the 30s north and west to the high 40s in the south. Tomorrow, some sun north, otherwise overcast with some wind along the coast, a chance of showers in the south with highs in the high 50s to the mid 60s. Previously undisclosed documents are calling attention to an essential question about Central Maine Power's preferred route for its 141-mile power line through Maine's western woods. Does the lease of state lands along the entire route require approval by two-thirds of the legislature? Fred Bever has this story.
In the course of considering a possible alternate route for the CMP project last year, then-director of the Bureau of Parks and Lands, Tom Desjardins, sought guidance from the Attorney General's office. He wanted to know whether his route would trigger a requirement voters added to the Maine Constitution 25 years ago, that a two-thirds vote of the legislature is needed to significantly change the use of state lands that are designated for conservation or recreation.
My request of the AG's office was, are we allowed legally to lease this piece of land for this purpose, meaning the corridor?
According to documents obtained by Maine Public, Assistant Attorney General Lauren Parker concluded that in the case of Desjardins' hypothetical lease, it would be legal to avoid legislative approval as long as the agency determined that the project would be managed appropriately and would not, quote, significantly alter the reserved lands. Desjardins floated the alternate route idea to the Mills administration, according to other documents, but it drew little interest. Andy Kutko, The new director of the Bureau of Parks and Lands now says that same memo on the hypothetical lease for what's called the Coldstream parcel is now being used to justify an earlier Bureau decision in 2014 to lease a separate state parcel on CMP's preferred route without seeking legislative approval.
It's our understanding that the lease across Coldstream was similar enough to that granted in 2014 that the same situation applies. That is, that the director of BPL at the time had the discretion to grant that lease, that it was fully within the Bureau director's discretion, and that it did not have to go through a two-thirds vote in the legislature.
Meanwhile, the newly unearthed information has caught the attention of opponents of the CMP transmission project.
The Parker memo talks about what constitutes a substantial change in use that requires this vote by the legislature.
Kathy Johnson is a lawyer with the Natural Resources Council of Maine, which has filed briefs on the two-thirds vote question in state permit proceedings that are now underway.
One of the things the memo says is beyond question that clear-cutting an area and erecting poles and a transmission line is a physical alteration of the land that is constitutes part of what is a substantial change in use.
The Parker memo addresses a specific hypothetical question about state lands that were purchased through Lands for Maine Future funds. While the lease CMP actually secured for its preferred route is for property the state got through a land grant from Massachusetts dating back to 1860. NRCM's Kathy Johnson says the same constitutional standard requiring legislative approval applies in both cases. But CMP Vice President Thorne Dickinson says the standard should not apply to the lands leased in 2014, and he notes that the lease itself includes language requiring them to be managed under standards set by state regulators.
It was clear to us, anyway, from the negotiations that we had with the state, that they were very mindful of the statutory requirements and acted in accordance with them and the signature of the lease.
During the permitting process earlier this year, a state hearing officer ruled that the question of a two-thirds legislative vote would ultimately have to be decided in court. And after initial filings, he closed the record to further arguments on the issue. But some are calling for a separate airing. Seth Berry, a Bodenham Democrat and frequent critic of CMP, co-chairs the legislature's Energy and Utilities Committee. He says the legislature was never provided notice of the lease that he can find, and that at minimum, it should consider the question in its next session.
I do think that the 2014 lease should be considered null and void until we've had a chance to really vet it and make sure that it is above board, that it is legal, and it is constitutional.
Berry and others also argue that CMP isn't paying enough for its lease of state lands, just under $3,700 a year. That compares to an initial payment of $1 million CMP promised for a parcel owned by the Passamaquoddy tribe, and more recently, an easement across lands owned by Yale University that will raise project costs by $950,000. Former Wilton State Senator Tom Saviello, a leader in a group of project opponents, says that alone merits review by lawmakers and the Mills administration.
The Bureau should suspend the lease anyway and renegotiate it. We don't need to be taken to the cleaners on this one, and that's really what's happening.
CMP's Thorne Dickinson says the annual rent for the state parcel, which breaks down to about $100 an acre, is based on an independent appraiser's assessment.
We have a signed lease that we think is valid and will keep moving forward, and we believe this project is important not only for Maine's future, but for all of New England as we battle climate change. And to the degree that people want to stand in the way of that, we'll do our best to educate them on the benefits of the project and, where necessary, fight the fight in order to this project go to the finish line.
Members of the Mills administration declined requests for comments. In an email, a spokesman says the administration was not involved in negotiations over the power line's route and that state regulators are making independent evaluations. The Land Use Planning Commission recently deadlocked over whether to approve CMP's initial plan to route the line near a wilderness pond. CMP has now proposed a way around that. A decision is possible next month. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
And you can see some of the documents involved here and that map of the hypothetical alternate route online at mainepublic.org. Following research released last month that showed nearly 3 billion birds have been lost in the last 50 years, there's more dire news out today for North American birds. A new report from the National Audubon Society finds that without rapid, wide-scale efforts to prevent the Earth's temperature from rising 3 degrees Celsius by the end of the century, nearly two-thirds of them could go extinct. As Susan Sharon reports, those include some of Maine's most iconic species.
Biologist and author Rachel Carson first warned of a silent spring in 1962. Back then, her focus was on pesticides. Now, the National Audubon Society is suggesting that silence could become a reality for nearly 400 bird species, including this one. In Maine, the white-throated sparrow's melody is among those threatened by changes in the climate and by loss of habitat. So is the haunting call of the common loon around lakes and ponds, and the ethereal song of the hermit thrush, famous for ushering in summer evenings in the Maine forest. In fact, the Audubon Report finds that more than 50% of Maine's 230 bird species are vulnerable to climate change across all four seasons.
We have the possibility of ameliorating the number of species that would be impacted.
Dr. Jeff Wells is the vice president of boreal conservation for the National Audubon Society, who says the key will be preventing the 3 degrees Celsius trajectory for global warming by capping greenhouse gas emissions and rapidly transitioning to clean energy.
Audubon, in its report, looked at what it would look like under a 1.5-degree scenario, which is basically what the international community is pushing to get by capping emissions in the coming decades.
If warming could be held to 1.5 degrees Celsius, Wells says the report predicts that about 75% of the North American birds considered climate vulnerable could be removed from the list.
So, a major change in the number of species that would be impacted.
In determining what climate changes might put birds at most risk, Audubon used modeling that looked at higher spring and summer temperatures, heavy rains, sea level rise, and dry conditions, including increased fire. Wells says if all of those risks are combined, Maine and the Northeast become a hotspot for overlapping threats for birds under the worst-case warming scenario. But on the flip side, under the preferred 1.5-degree future, Maine and the Northeast see many of those risks removed. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
And Maine's two senators both say that President Trump's decision to pull U.S. troops from the Syrian border and open the door for Turkey to launch an offensive against Kurds in northern Syria was a mistake. Independent Angus King and Republican Susan Collins say they support imposing sanctions if Turkey goes too far, and that the entire Senate should be briefed on how the decision was reached. Mel Leary has more.
Collins says the president's decision is jeopardizing the lives of Kurds who have supported the United States in its fight against ISIS, and believes sanctions against Turkey could be warranted.
I think sanctions are a good idea. I worry about whether they will be effective at this point in stopping the Turks from this slaughter of our allies. I vehemently disagree with the president's decision.
King says he wants to review the package of sanctions that have been put together by Republican Senator Lindsey Graham, but says he will support sanctions and believes that most other senators will also.
I heard Senator Graham say the other day he thought he could get 95 votes. I think he can. I'm certainly one of those votes. To have exposed our Kurdish allies to the tender mercies of the Turks, I think, is reprehensible.
King says one of the most troubling consequences of the president's action in Syria is that allies now are unsure about whether they can rely on the United States.
We're most successful when we have allies, and now we basically signal our allies, you can't count on it.
And King joins Collins in calling for the Trump administration to brief the entire Senate on the matter.
I believe that the administration has an obligation to come before us and explain what I believe was an incredibly poor decision.
Both senators who serve on the Intelligence Committee say they are also puzzled by a comment from Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky that he would gladly investigate any Ukrainian-based efforts to influence the 2016 U.S. elections, since the committee's 2-year investigation uncovered no links to Ukraine. King and Collins say they expect the Turkey situation to be a focus of discussion when Congress gets back to work next week. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org and join us tomorrow on Maine Calling at 1 o'clock for a conversation about what's new in veterinary medicine here in Maine. I'm Nora Flaherty.